Hello, and thank you for calling the Tattoo Hotline with your hosts, Teresa Sharp and Gia Rose, taking a deep dive into the tattoo industry, hot takes, fun facts, and Q&A. Please stay on the line, and your call will be connected shortly.
Hey everyone, I'm Teresa Sharp.
And I'm Gia Rose.
And you're listening to The Tattoo Hotline, a bi-weekly podcast where you call in with your questions, comments, and experiences regarding everything tattoo.
With our collective 35 years as artists in the industry, we have done it all. From television shows, tattooing around the world, studio owning, teaching, and now your hotline hosts.
Hey everybody, we're back! So episode 2, we did it! We got our first one out, and now we're back. So thank you to everybody that listened to our first podcast ever. It was very, very fun to do, and it was great to get all of the feedback from everybody. And also a huge thanks to our editor, Jared, for being able to make it make sense, because we talked a lot.
He made it make sense, and hopefully we can pull this off again, because we're both ramblers and storytellers.
Exactly. So here we go. We're getting into the episode 2, Tattoo Gate Part 2, Gimmicks, Grifts, and Scams. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Okay. So I think when we first, you know, Therese, you know, you and I, we've both seen tons of this stuff in our industry over our careers. But, and so we had like, we're like, okay, we had a lot to like talk about. But then when we started looking into it, we were like, holy shit. There's a lot.
Oh my God. We were like, this will be a nice quick one. We can get in, you know, really pick like one thing to talk about and just get into it, you know? And we were like, yeah, gimmicks, grifts, and scams, you know, like that's an easy one. We have some recent ones we can talk about. We have some other older ones we can talk about. And then we started doing our research and we were like, fuck.
Oh God.
There's too much. So let me just start off with some of the early gimmicks that we will continue to see these forever. They will continue to happen as long as tattoos are popular and people get tattooed. There will always be these quick little gimmicks that come and go. You see them on the market, then they're gone. One of them is tattoo lotions, tattoo healing ointments and creams and things like that that are marketed towards clients, towards artists even, to help you heal your tattoos or to keep your tattoos brighter for the rest of your life. And they're going to make your skin look amazing, and they're going to especially make your tattoos look amazing. We've seen that stuff. And it's crazy. It's crazy to see that constantly throughout the entire 15 years that I've been tattooing, to see these products just like come and go. And it's always like some new celebrity's pushing it. I think the last one I saw was the drummer from Blink-182 was pushing that tattoo lotion that was like, it'll make your tattoos look just like they got them, you know, like you just got them yesterday. And it's all it is, yeah. Is lotion. It's literally just lotion.
It's just lotion. It's the same with anything that claims to remove a tattoo, mm-hmm. in the form of a lotion or a cream. It's, these things are not physiologically possible because, yes. of the way tattoos work. A tattoo is an indelible mark. It means it cannot be removed. And we have the technology now to remove them through lasers and lasers only. And we can talk a little bit about how those work. But tattoo pigment, we've recently discovered the way they stay, and this is really important, is that it is put into a very specific layer of skin where your macrophages, which is the first line of defense in our body and our immune system, are these cells. And they actually swallow the pigment particle, and the pigment shines through the belly of that cell. And that's why it stays. And as that cell dies, it spits out the pigment particle, and the new cell that replaces it re-swallows that pigment particle and continues to shine through. And that's why tattoos fade over time, is because every time that process happens, a little bit of pigment is lost in that process. Mm-hmm. And it's because our body is constantly trying to shed that. Now, many studies have been done recently that this is not harmful to us at all. Virologists have recently been looking into the techniques of tattooing because of transdermal vaccines, because it is so permanent with us in order to use that technology. And that's why laser removal is the only thing that really will remove a tattoo. And even that takes a lot of time and sessions. And the reason why that works is because a laser is using light, in order to excite those pigment particles so fast that they break apart into tinier little pigments that our bodies can flush out naturally. And that's how they fade, age, or are gotten rid of. Anything that claims that it does that, that is not a laser, is a gimmick. It's not physiologically possible.
Yeah. So essentially, like, even then, all of those lotions or ointments that are claiming that your tattoos will look brighter or that they will last longer also don't work. Because in the same vein that, like, you can't remove a tattoo with a cream, you also can't make it last longer with a cream. It really depends on your biological makeup as a human being. And everybody's skin is different. Everybody's body will renew those cells differently and in different amounts of time.
And we're constantly bombarded with UV rays, which is what will break up pigment over time, which is why we use sunscreen in order to block that. And that's what really will preserve the longevity of your tattoos.
There are, for whatever reason, there are just so many little, like, gimmicks that people try to every so often try to reinvent in tattooing. And one of them is the idea of the temporary tattoo. So along with the lotions that are there to, like, supposedly make your tattoos last forever or get rid of your tattoos, there's also the idea of the temporary tattoo, which I swear to God, like, in the 15 years that I've been tattooing, I see this happen over and over and over again. There's always a new company. There's always a new ink brand. There's always this new thing that they're coming out with. It's like, oh no, this time it really is temporary.
And you'll notice they say variations or results may vary. Mm-hmm. That puts the responsibility back on you when it doesn't work, because it won't work. It's not, again, physiologically possible.
You know what I just thought about? I just thought about the fact that our shop has a waiver that everybody has to sign when they get tattooed at our studio. And on that waiver, we have a box that you have to check. And this is a requirement from the state of Virginia that we have to include this box on our release form that essentially says that you understand, as the client, that tattoos are permanent and painful.
Yep.
We have to have you understand that this is going to be on you forever. Or at least for a really long time in your life. And it is insane to me that, like, it's supposed to be a permanent mark. And for whatever reason, people just keep coming back and they're like, yeah, but maybe I don't want it forever. And it's like, then we're like, tattoos aren't for you.
Right. And, or these products that tout this, like, oh, you don't have to have the commitment of a tattoo, but you can still get tattooed. Which I always am like, how are these people really thinking about this? Because, like, if you don't want the permanency of a tattoo, why would you go through the pain of a tattoo? Mm-hmm. You could just get fucking henna. Like, I mean, like, really, they're beautiful and they're not permanent and they last quite a long time.
Let me pull up the message that we got from one of our listeners who wanted to talk about a specific company in regards to this very, very real thing. So we had Sarah write in. She says, hi, y'all. This isn't exactly personal experience, but I wondered if you knew more about Ephemeral Tattoo, the chain of studios that do semi-permanent tattoos that are made to fade. Recently, I've started seeing testimonials from people whose tattoos didn't fade at all or became unintelligible blobs. From what I know of ink, the body, and tattooing as a first-year artist, this all raises a huge red flag for me. Am I being unfair to a new tech that is working out the kinks, or are they just doing poor quality tattoos and calling it a feature?
It's a total scam. Our goal as tattooers is to make tattoos stay and to be crisp and clear and have longevity.
To that effect, I mean, when I was learning how to tattoo, that was the biggest tell for whether or not you were a good tattoo artist, was that your tattoos were there after you tattooed them, that they stayed. And not only that they stayed, like, after the initial process, but they stayed for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And that, like, 20 years down the road, they still looked good, or at least, like, as close to good as they could after the aging of time and sun exposure and all that. The idea of the ephemeral tattoos is that it immediately starts to fade. So you only have it for, let's say, 8 months before it starts to break down, or maybe even less, because they're creating a pigment that is not meant to stay in your skin, right? So if it does do its job and it starts to fade, you have X amount of months before it's gone. And in that time frame, it looks bad. It looks like a bad tattoo, either a tattoo that you've been lasering or it looks like a poorly done tattoo. You can't make out what it is. It becomes like a ghost line or a blob or a bruisey look on your skin. And you then have to walk around for the rest of the time that is fading with this thing that just looks terrible. It looks like shit.
Right. Yes. And I don't know, honestly, like I haven't dug into, I don't know their product in a, like a scientific, you know, makeup or whatever, how it's made, but I assume it has to be something along the lines of the pigment particles are small enough that your body can break it up. The problem with that is that you cannot predict nor, control how your body breaks that up. You know what I mean? You just can't. And so it's going to fade in weird places. You might have half of it that stays and half of it that's gone.
Whenever these new products come out, these new inks that are trying to do something weird with your body, like whether it's a disappearing act that's created from the UV light or whatever, or it's something that fades super fast, or like blacklight ink tattoos, you know, that kind of stuff where they're using like an effervescence to try and that reacts to a very specific type of light. It's again, it's the same thing. And blacklight tattoos have been around since I started tattooing, but that ink is trash. It's garbage. And it's super hard to work with. It's not FDA approved. It doesn't go through the same rigorous testing that a lot of our general tattoo pigments go through. It's a gimmick because it doesn't really makes sense to get an entire tattoo done in blacklight tattoo ink or in a fading tattoo or as a disappearing tattoo. Like, no, most artists are not going to want to work with these pigments because the very like process and what it results in is not, it's not artwork. It's not something to like put in your portfolio and be like, yeah, I'm really good at this thing. Like it's such a temporary, like, thrill.
It's novelty.
Yeah, it's a novelty. And the thing that scares me the most about these novelty tattoo inks is not knowing what's in them, because these companies don't want to disclose that. And not knowing like the long-term effects of that in our bodies, which has been a controversy in tattooing for a really, really long time. I wanted to touch on just a couple other ones that I found when I was looking through the internet, and things that like I was like, oh yeah, and then there was that the Everence tattoo stuff.
Oh my god I remember this because I remember all, like, I was on Instagram and then I remember all of a sudden it was like this wave of like
top name tattoo artists that we all love,
their profiles changing to this thing that was like, what was it, Everence, and then we were all like, what the fuck? What is this? Is this a cult? Is this a new cult? And nobody knew what it was.
So what Everence is essentially you can send them the ashes of a loved one or a cotton swab of the inside of somebody's mouth. And by ashes of a loved one, I mean your cat or your grandmother, doesn't matter. And they will extract the DNA, I don't know how, and they will put that into a bottle that you can then pour into ink, and then you can get tattooed with your loved one's ashes, or no, sorry, your loved one's DNA, and then you can have their DNA in you forever. And that, I don't want to like make light of this, because it's really serious. Like, somebody lost somebody, or they lost their favorite pet or whatever, and they're devastated. And this company came out and they were like, let's take advantage of your pain and suffering, and let's create this product that you will believe has the DNA of your dead relative or your dead whatever, like, and we're going to put that into an ink, and then you can get tattooed by that and carry it around you forever. And I'm just like, guys, one, how is anybody supposed to fact check that?
Yeah.
You know, like, you're just sending ashes to a company and you're like, okay, extract the DNA, and I'm going to trust you to extract this DNA. I'm not a scientist. I don't know how this works. And then you're going to give it back to me. And then I'm going to take it to a tattoo artist, and I have to hope that the tattoo artist I take it to is actually willing to work with this product.
To touch on that, like I can say I've had personal experience with people who've had ashes tattooed in them, and I've worked at shops that have done that. But it's literally the person actually brings the ashes themselves to the artist, and then the artist is willing to drop that in their pigment. Mm-hmm. Now, I personally haven't heard any like bad reactions from that. It's such a small amount. And it's such a private thing between that person and that artist. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and they bring it themselves. There's no third party product or whatever. I'm not exactly sure how this company is doing that with their stuff. And it really is predatory when you're selling something that is meant to make somebody feel connected to a part of their lives that has to do with like the loss of something that they really love. When the tattoo, like if they want to get a tattoo in remembrance, that's enough.
It's very disturbing to see these companies coming out of the woodworks because of the rise in popularity of tattoos, and to take these small bits of our job, which are important, which are, you know, very personal, and to try and capitalize off of it. It's really sad.
And a lot of these companies too, what I've noticed is that they'll go and pay a well-known tattooer or a celebrity tattooer, whatever you want to call them, to promote their product. You know, that gives me a lot of question about, you know, like, again, you're putting stuff out there that hasn't been tested for a long time, mm-hmm. that doesn't have any science or evidence behind it, that this is what it does. And then you as a tattooer, if you're approached by these companies, you really have to question about what you're tying your name to. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to promote it and you're saying, I guarantee this, or I sign off on this for whatever reasons, you know, like, do you even understand how tattoos work? I know a lot of tattooers that don't or can't explain to people why tattoos stay.
All right. So we've talked a lot about gimmicks. And, you know, there's tons that we could get into that we didn't even get a chance to touch on, such as sound wave tattoos, animated tattoos, magic ink, ultra ink. Like, there's so many products out there that we consider gimmicks. But let's move on. Now let's get into talking about tattoo schools.
To me, tattoo schools, I think in general, not just to me, but in general, tattoo schools fall under the terms of grifts, which is a small scale swindle. And the reason why is because it's misleading you into thinking that by paying a bunch of money to these schools that you're somehow going to be a tattooer, be able to tattoo or go get a job. When the reality is that tattooing is a trade skill. These schools are not trade organizations. It's not apprenticeship based. And so it's a swindle. It's a grift.
When I started getting into tattooing, it was abhorrent that tattoo schools existed. No artist, no like good artist in tattooing was on board with them. Nobody wanted to participate in them. It was usually like some guy in a small city who decided to open a tattoo school in that city. And then he was like, I'm going to take on 20 people and teach them how to tattoo. And then every person had to pay him, you know, I don't know, $1,000 or $1,500 or $5,000 for the class. And then he would, for 2 weeks, like, quote unquote, teach them how to tattoo. And they would walk away with very, very little understanding of what they were doing. And then they would try to, he would give them like some certificate that he printed off and be like, now you're a tattoo artist. And then they'd try to go get jobs and everybody would fucking laugh at them and be like, yeah, that's not how tattooing works, because it's an apprenticeship based industry.
So I had the pleasure of a traditional apprenticeship, and a couple years after that I moved to Oregon, and Oregon has some of the strictest tattoo laws in the United States next to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. But Oregon, from my knowledge, is the only state that actually requires tattoo schools over apprenticeships, and it's a huge deal there. And so I watched for years what happens, and there are only a handful of shops that are sanctioned as schools. Mm-hmm. So you can't just teach. Their curriculum at the time, I don't know if it's the same now, was 6 months and only 60 hours of tattooing. I'm going to tell you, Teresa and I, as professional tattooers, there is no way you can be a good tattooer after that, unless you are an anomaly. There are exceptions to every rule. But in general, no. So they would pay about, I think at the time it was like $4,000 to $6,000 for this course. They would be licensed by the state. then they would leave these studios, go try to get a job, and no one could hire them because they can't tattoo. They don't know anything about tattooing. And so then they couldn't get a job. So they would go open their own studios. Mm-hmm. They would survive for about a year or two before they had way too many bad experiences with clients, and then they would shut down.
Yes.
And this was this was literally like a cycle that happened.
But it's a cycle that's still happening, which is sad. And it's like there's more tattoo schools now than there was when we started tattooing. And
oh God, we just Googled it this morning, and
but that's like the next step. So like, first, there's the tattoo schools, which takes then the person who doesn't know how to tattoo at all and gives them a very basic and oftentimes poor understanding of how to tattoo. And they usually don't get the experience that they need to be good at tattooing. And then, like you said, they try to get a job. Maybe some of them can land a job, but majority of them will not.
I've mentored a few people who had really shitty school experiences. Right. And it's like, I can see that you're a good artist. You learned all of these horrible habits. Mm-hmm. I'm going to reteach you to tattoo. I'm going to mentor you. And the problem with that too, though, is that like what a lot of these people don't realize is when they learn these horrible habits, a lot of tattooers won't take them on to reteach them because it's so much work to break those habits.
How does a tattoo school differ from a tattoo seminar?
Ooh, okay. So a tattoo school is a small scale swindle that doesn't actually teach you anything but the basics of tattooing. Now, because it's an apprenticeship-based trade, once you learn the actual trade of tattooing, and now you're going to grow your experience base, a seminar is integral to continuing education in tattooing when taught by professional tattooers. In order for you to build and expand your learning about tattooing in all different forms. And so seminars, real seminars that are taught by professional tattooers, are really integral to the continuing education of all of our industry.
And I would say that seminars, I mean, that's been something that has risen up, I think, during our careers, because prior to that, seminars didn't really exist. Information was so guarded and gatekept by people that there was not a lot of sharing of information. And so now we're seeing young artists who, you know, have their 1 to 3 years worth of tattooing looking for, you know, information on how to get better at tattooing, how to get better at client management, how to get better at business management. And so now we're seeing this rise of the tattoo seminar that is geared for people who have already completed an apprenticeship, who are now tattooing. And that's where, that's where this relates to the Tattoo Gate, because tattooing came about because of seminars that were being taught by a particular company to artists. And Gia, I just want to know, like, what is, like, when does a tattoo seminar become a grift?
I think in general, a tattoo seminar becomes a grift when you're not actually learning anything that's based in real observable reality, professional experience. And I think there's a difference between hands-on seminars and lectures, and both are very valuable, but they have to be education that you can actually put into practice in the real world.
Right. And so like you and I have both taught seminars, like we've done it more than once. Mm-hmm. And I would say that to me, the difference between the seminars that led to TattooGate, the online classes that led to TattooGate, and what you and I have witnessed from our friends that we have put into practice ourselves, is a level of experience and data collecting that we have done through our 15 years of tattooing that we can back up, you know, when we're teaching people like tips and tricks on tattooing, when we're teaching them like information on how to deal with clients or how to book appointments, like
even how to be a better artist in general, like a better illustrator,
right?
You know,
but that's all coming from a place of experience for us. That's all coming from,
absolutely,
like information that we're giving you, because it's like, this is what worked for us, this is what got us to where we are now, and we're telling you that so that you can take that information and potentially do something with it that's going to help your career. And obviously, like anything else, like for some people it's going to be great, and for some people maybe it doesn't work, but we can back it up because it did work for us. We're not giving you a product that we aren't
sure if it works. And that, I think, is where this tie-in, like when we're talking about gimmicks, grifts, and scams, this ties in specifically with TattooGate, because TattooGate was based off of a model of pricing that nobody was using, that nobody established a career on, that nobody, you know, had years worth of data to back up as it being a successful model for how to deal with clients or how to charge for design work. And they sold it to, I don't even know how many people.
Unfortunately, you know, this one specific tattooer in Canada, I know her career is ruined. You know, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I have no idea per her personally or know, like, what she knew, what she didn't know or whatever, but she bought and took this class and was taught this teaching model, which she thought was standard, used it. And then because of it, I think now on TikTok, it's 80 million hashtags. Her career is ruined. There were news articles published about it. She got threats to her. You know what I mean? Like, and that's because she was taught something that is not real, based in reality, and was a complete scam.
My biggest hope is that we get, between now and our next episode, that we get some people who call in with experiences that they've had, either with online courses, whether that's tattoo schools or seminars that you've done online or in person. I would really like to hear from our audience on their opinions on that stuff, because that's what directly ties this into TattooGate and what led to TattooGate. And we are definitely going to get into that on the next episode. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what y'all have to say about it. I would like to know if anybody has any experiences, particularly with the guy who taught the TattooGate model from Launchpad, or if you have any experiences with Launchpad itself, please, please hit us up. We would really like to hear your stories.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Let's get back to it. And I think we're going to start off jumping right into some of the write-ins that we've had from our listeners. And the first one comes from Natalie Summers. And Natalie writes, "In regards to scams, I am very into the tattoo community, even though I'm not an artist. I worked as a front desk at a shop. I always get the, you know, you won $1,000, you know, tattoo scams on Instagram. And what is annoying is that I forward those to the actual artist and they never address it. I am sad that they aren't looking out for their clients. I get not wanting to read DMs or get DMs on Instagram, but I wish people would rethink saying no, like what saying no to DMs means."
I think right now this is the biggest scam that I actually see on a weekly basis. So from, you know, tattooers trying to support themselves or other people by saying fake account, report this, and it's usually in the form of like someone creating a fake account in the name and look of an actual professional tattooer and scamming deposits or, you know, money from potential clients in order to win a free tattoo or even book appointments. Mm-hmm. Now, these are very hard to fight as a tattooer. I looked into, you know, ways you can do that. The problem is that if a scammer does this, creates a fake account, they can block you and all accounts you create. So it's almost impossible for you to monitor if it's happening unless somebody screenshots it and sends it to you.
Right.
And then I tried to see if there was a way that you could monitor it, and you would literally have to create a whole separate Facebook account, email account that's not attached to your professional accounts in order to monitor it. And so it's very hard for artists to do that. So one of the things that really is, it falls on clients. If you're looking to book a tattoo and you look at that account, this is where client research comes in. You can literally go to the left top-hand corner, specifically in Instagram, and click on the name of the account, and it'll show you when that account was created. And if it's verified, it'll show you when it was verified. So if the account was created in the last couple of months and there's a ton of photographs on there, and the name is usually got like a few misspellings or random dots in it, it's a scam account. You know, it's very unlikely that any professional tattooer who has a large body of work has not been on Instagram for a very long time.
Yeah, I would say that
you can also, if you don't want to look, click on the name of the artist, if you just look through the photos, and it lists on every photo, like, the date that that photo was uploaded. And so you can see if that photo was uploaded, you know, 6 years ago or yesterday or 2 months or whatever. And mm-hmm. if you scroll down to the bottom of that page and nothing gets older than like a couple months or even a week or a couple days, that's obviously a sign that you're dealing with a scam page. So I think it's also good to remember that if it is too good to be true, it probably is. And so, again, when it comes to booking with an artist, there should be a fair amount of dialogue that occurs between the artist and the client, or between the artist or between the booking agent and the client, because some artists have people that are doing their books for them. So there has to be some kind of a conversation that occurs, and it has to involve like what you're getting tattooed and where you're getting it at and how long it's going to take and what day you want to schedule. And if you're not hitting into all of these points, there's a really good indication that that person is a scam artist who is just taking your money, and they have no intention of actually figuring out any of that information. And in regards to what Natalie was saying, where, you know, Natalie's frustrated because she's sitting at a front desk and she's seeing things come through where it's a scam involving an artist that she knows. And she's letting them know, like, by sending them, like, forwarding them a DM that has that information. And so, like, Natalie, obviously that's super appreciated that you would do that for somebody. And yes, like, as a tattoo artist, I think it is important, even if you don't respond through DMs, to check your DMs from time to time. And if somebody is alerting you to a potential scam situation that is happening using your name, you as an artist definitely have an obligation to address that, mm-hmm. to talk to, yeah. you know, to, you know, do your own research regarding that. And if somebody hasn't created a fake account, like, report it. Let's roll right into the next scam situation, which I have written in from another client. And they wrote, "Hello, I recently caught your first episode. Great content and discussion. I do have a comment question. You talk about the standard, which is close to the sun as it's going to get for an average. As top-tier artists yourselves, shop owners, and event producers, TV celebrities, blah, 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 I'm certain your own shop rate is above the average that you're speaking of. At what point should a client put their faith in a premium price point without creating another scenario where an artist abuses this wisdom? What should a client be mindful of when confronted with a higher than average price? What tips could you offer a client to stay safe with their money?"
Ooh, so this is a good one. So I think there's a lot here to unpack.
Yes.
And we actually didn't touch on the standard day rates in our we talked about them. We didn't actually
hit the price. I think we might have mentioned just like some basic ones. I think I had mentioned that some people are like $1,000 for a day or $1,200 for a day. Gia, what are you on a day rate?
So I just moved my day rate up because I moved to New York. So the standard of living in New York, the cost of living is so much higher. So I moved it up to, I'm currently $2,500 a day. Mm-hmm. And my day consists of 5 to 8 hours of tattooing, but I include hours of necessary reworks, redrawing, and so I spend my entire day with my client. I'm also a very fast tattooer, so I can get probably twice the amount that some people, that a lot of people could do. So I can finish like an outer arm shield, like elbow to shoulder, whole, the entire side within a single sitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's how I do it. But when I did raise my rates, and I think we had this conversation, but I did talk to other artists who tattoo the same caliber as us. They're all our peers. Mm-hmm. They travel around the world. We all teach. We've all done these things. We all kind of keep them the same levels. Like, we talk to each other. Yeah. Like, what are you charging? What are you charging? And where are you?
Yeah, I would say that, like, I was just going to say that I also charge, I charge $2,000 a day when I'm tattooing at home. And that is a newer rate. And I would say that other artists in my shop, I think I have somebody who charges $1,500 for the day, and I have somebody that charges $1,200 for the day. So, you know, the artists in my shop are allowed to kind of set that price, but I do talk to them about that price and why they feel that they need to set it at that, you know? And again, it is a supply and demand thing. So as an artist becomes more popular, they have more people trying to get tattooed by them, it does allow you to raise your rates to a certain point. And I guess one of the things that I think that is good for clients to keep in mind when they're confronted with a higher than average price is to be able to find out if that artist like has kind of been working under that price range for a while, or if they are comfortable disclosing that information online. I think that that also involves a fair level of confidence in their ability to do their job, and also like just knowing that that's what they're worth. And so like you can go to my website and under my frequently asked questions, my FAQ page, you will find like the price of what it costs to get tattooed by me. I like to keep that information available to everybody so that anytime, because people do need to be able to save up for tattoos, that information is out there. I want them to know how much I cost. I want them to know what they're getting themselves into before they even bother to email me, because I don't want to get through the excitement of like being like, hey, I'm ready to do your tattoo, and then they find out how expensive I am, and then they're like, oh no, you know, like I want them prepared as much as possible. And the best way to do that is to provide that information to your clients through a website, or to have it on your Instagram page, or, you know, even to just talk about it when you're posting. Like if you do a ask me questions after you open your book or something like that on Instagram, and people ask you how expensive you are, like tell them.
And I think we should touch real quick on like what is average day rates, which I think is usually between, I think now I want to say is usually between 12 and 1800, like average.
I would say it can be an even wider range than that. I would say you have an average of 1,000 to 2,000.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's right.
You know, so, and then depending on where you're at, like if you're in New York, it could end up being 25 to 3,000 a day. If the artist is traveling, the rate can go up because of the cost of travel that they're including into that. If they're just tattooing in a very, very expensive city, or they're a very, very sought after artist.
Right. And I do have to say that like within our peer group, I do know some artists that are considered celebrity artists that do charge, you know, $35,000 to $6,000 a day. I would consider that higher than average.
Higher than average.
I would consider Teresa and I within the average day rate of artists that are doing what we're doing, the amount that we're doing, the work that we're doing. And we keep that pretty much standard with our peers.
Yeah. So let me move on to another write-in that we had through our Tattoo Hotline email. This comes from Julie. Julie is stating that she follows an artist from Australia, and that artist is actually going to be coming to the States. And they got really, really excited because they live in the States and it would be impossible for them to be able to afford the trip all the way out to Australia to get tattooed by this artist. And so when they found out that the artist was going to be coming to the States, and not only that, but much closer to where they live in the States, they were like, oh my gosh, I have to book with them. Julie writes, I contacted them and they got back to me saying that the kind of tattoo I'm looking to get, which was a large scale back of thigh piece, would probably be an all day thing and run about $3,000. So a little higher than average price here. Julie writes, at first I was like, well, fuck, I don't have that. That's also a shit ton more than I was expecting for a black and white tattoo. But then I was thinking, she's also paying for her travel, her supplies, etc. And again, this is a once in a lifetime experience for me because I'm never getting my ass to Australia. So I put down the $700 deposit plus some on my credit card and booked my slot. They said that by the end of April, they would for sure have a date set up and details. By the end of April, I reached out again because I didn't hear back. And they got back to me saying that they are now thinking it will be October 19th and it would be about a 5-hour session. So now I'm like, well, wait, I thought it was an all day thing. And her person said that she works fast and doesn't take breaks and is very efficient, and not to worry because she's definitely amazing with what she does. So now I'm kind of worried / anxious because we are hitting June 1st. I'm going to email them again to lock down a date and time so I can get travel secured for myself. But is this pricing and setup typical for someone traveling from outside the country?
Boo. Okay.
GF says boo.
First of all, the pricing, I would say, is a little higher than average, but, you know, reasonable. For black and gray, I tend to think that, Depends on the black and gray. This is my personal opinion just because of timing, but every artist is different. It's so subjective. The biggest red flag is this. You should have a date as soon as you book a deposit.
Yes.
That is no matter what. As soon as you give someone money, yes. You get a date.
Yes.
That is what that is for. If you do not, that is, I think, an unprofessional practice.
Yeah.
I don't know who this artist is, you know, and again, people kind of do things a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. But especially if you're then followed up with changing dates months out.
Yeah.
So like, as you and I both know, we book appointments in other countries all the time. Mm-hmm. And we have our dates ahead of time. We don't just go, I'm going to Europe one day. Send me money. God. Maybe I'll be there in 2 years. No. And, you know, sometimes things happen where, like, I've had dates traveled. Like, during the pandemic, I was trying to get into Canada for 2 fucking years, and I couldn't because of COVID. And I had to cancel conventions that I had booked already, and I immediately refunded those deposits. Mm-hmm. And we offered people, you know, you can either wait until I can get into Canada, or you can come to the States, because the States didn't care if you had COVID.
Right, yeah.
Or we'll give you a refund. But that date is integral to your deposit.
Yeah, I agree. I think that neither one of us has ever started taking deposits for appointments that didn't actually exist. If I'm going overseas to do a convention or a guest spot, either one, I know those dates. I don't post about those dates until I know those dates. I hope that it works out if you decide to go through with it and get the tattoo. I hope it works out. If you don't, I hope that you can get your deposit back, because it's such a bummer to be struggling to get in with an artist who you really, really love, and you just don't feel like you're making that connection with them. But yeah, there's a level of professionalism that needs to be addressed there. And I hope that, you know, that you come back with enough information to at least handle that situation for yourself. Moving on, we had an anonymous write-in through our Instagram. She writes, I was a newer tattoo artist around 2 or 3 years of tattooing at the time, and it was my very first time doing a tattoo convention. Of course, I was not swamped at the convention, but I found out that an artist that I really look up to had a no-show, and I wanted to snag the opening. I picked up one of their pre-drawn flash designs, and he did it. He tattooed me for under 3 hours and charged me $800. At the time, I assumed because they were in a different class as me as far as like tattooing. They were at a different level. And so I didn't bat an eye at the price. Fast forward to a couple years later, where I've acquired other work from them. And soon after I started working with them, they exposed that they did indeed overcharge me.
What?
Yes, at the convention. And they apologized. And so this artist stayed working with them, for less than a year before leaving. And they left for other reasons. But one of the main reasons that they left was I didn't respect how they treated their clients and chose to overcharge when they wanted to. This artist is a very successful shop owner. They also fixed, quote unquote, some of the work they did on me while I worked for them. And before this, they also told me that sometimes they are careless of the work they do and just half-assed to get through the day to get paid. I definitely see
Oh my God, I hate that so much.
I definitely see it in the details of my tattoos from them after they said this. We are cordial, but definitely not friends. I have zero respect for people who do this to other humans.
To me, number one, it seems like a malicious thing to do, to be like, haha, I took advantage of you.
Yeah, what the hell?
You know, like, I'm going to make you feel, you know, like you got hoodwinked.
Yeah, seriously. Like what's crazy to me is that they revealed it. They were like, they obviously took this person for their money and charged them $800 for 3 hours worth of tattoo work that they then apparently didn't even really care that much about doing and kind of half-assed their way through. But to reveal it, to be like, reveal! Ha-ha! I totally fucked up your tattoo and charged you more than I would have on any other day just because? Like, that's so shitty. No wonder they had a fucking no-show. Like, because this person sucks. Like,
you know, for a lot of times, a lot of tattooers felt this anonymity in this way of doing business that they could kind of get away with a lot of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was like hustle. Like, you know, it was part of the hustle of like getting, you know, trying to make as much money as you can. But I feel like at that time period, there wasn't as much of a concern for like repeat business. Like they were just like, if they didn't think you were going to be like a longtime client, they just tried to get what they could out of you. That has changed. But I do have one funny story that somebody wrote in with that I would like to just throw out there. Just because it's a nice way to wrap up the show and take a little breath from some of this heavy stuff and kind of get into what the quote unquote crazy client, because this is apparently an instance that happened. Alec writes in that I recently had a crazy client, booked the appointment and put down their $200 deposit. Come the day of the appointment, she canceled on me 90 minutes before due to a snowstorm that hadn't started yet. I would have finished the tattoo before it was even expected to start, but I rescheduled with her and she was super happy that I was willing to work with her. So the next appointment comes up. She cancels on me the morning of because she was sick. I was a little upset, but there's not much I can do, so I was nice about it and I rebooked her. During all of this, she decided to sneak her boyfriend into the tattoo, wanting to get a small one for him. So now it's not just her appointment, it's her and her boyfriend's appointment, and he wants to get a small tattoo as well. I agreed as it was a super simple tattoo, and after thinking about it, they decided, I don't know if I want to do this. So I messaged her that I wanted to just do her tattoo first, since that's what she originally booked, and that's what she gave me the $200 for. She lost it, absolutely freaked out, told me that I was unprofessional, and that as someone who is autistic, she doesn't like it when plans change. I stated that it was her who changed the plans twice already. She insisted that I give her deposit back, and when I refused, she said her boyfriend was going to handle it, and that I, quote-unquote, don't want to mess with him. She then had a day to cool down and asked me if I would still tattoo her. I couldn't believe it. When I declined, she told me that she was going to take me to court. I have not heard from her since. I had a gut feeling about this one when she was booking, and I need to listen to my instincts more. Thank you, Alec, for that fun little story. This is definitely something that happens from time to time in tattooing, where you just get a client who, I mean, I don't know, like, I guess they want a tattoo, but then, you know, they put down the money and then maybe the time comes and they just don't have the money for the actual appointment. So then they start coming up with reasons that they can't come in for the appointment. And it is interesting, like both of these reasons are kind of like, I'm like, okay, I can kind of see that, like a snowstorm, you're worried you're going to get trapped on a highway or something. Sure. And Alec, obviously, he totally gets it too. He's like, yep, you got it. You know what, we'll reschedule it. And then when she calls in and she's like, oh, I'm sick. And you're like, well, I have, you know, like, there's nothing I can do to make you prove to me that you're sick, you know? So like, go ahead, like, yeah, take the day, you know? And then, when it starts to get weird, like they're like, oh, also my boyfriend wants to get in on this appointment. And like, maybe like you can also tattoo that. And it's like, I would also be starting to freak out a little bit, because that's not what I agreed to, you know, like I very much like want to know what I'm getting myself into and like who I'm talking to and what they want. And it would be so awkward to have somebody's boyfriend just all of a sudden be a part of this and I've never talked to them and I'm supposed to come up with a design for them too. Like, what in the hell? Like, that's so...
You're like, wait a minute, when did this become a threesome? The cancellation 90 minutes without any notice twice in a row is a loss of deposit, yeah, regardless.
Yeah. I think so, for the clients that are listening, like, this is obviously like something to
keep in mind. How to not be a bad client.
Like, if you don't want to get labeled as a bad client or a crazy client for that matter, it's important that like you also are honest and upfront about your intentions with this tattoo. You know, like if we give you the price and there's any doubt that you might not be able to like pay for that tattoo, like let us know, you know, or if your schedule is super crazy and you just don't know if you're going to be able to make it to your appointment because like you get called into work a lot, or maybe you have a kid that has a, you know, like a lot going on and you have to deal with that, or whatever the case is, like whatever is going to make it hard for you to get there and, you know, complete that appointment. Like, it is your job to like, let us know. Cause we can't do anything. Like, our hands are tied.
Yeah. I would definitely say that, like, I mean, I've had clients who I'm so lucky with my clients right now. They're so amazing. Who have been very upfront about being like, hey, you know, some stuff came up. I can't afford my session this month. And it's like, no problem. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll move you out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you know, it's the notice that really matters when it comes down to the tattooer's time. Like, the more notice, the better.
Like, I think my favorite thing about this story, though, is the whole, like, when she insisted that she get her money back and the artist refused, she then uses her boyfriend as like a, he's going to handle it. And you don't want to mess with him. And it's like, oh God. And then just like icing on the cake, like she cools down for a day and she's like, do you think maybe you could still do my tattoo though? Like, please. Like, I promise my boyfriend won't beat you up now. Like, what?
No, that's not how that works. You can't be like, I'm going to have someone beat you up, but can we still tattoo? No.
That is when you get the label of crazy client, when you threaten to send your boyfriend in to beat us up and then immediately turn around and still want to get the tattoo.
All right, you guys, we're wrapping up today's podcast. Our next episode is the final installment in TattooGate Part 3, and it's going to be about accountability and transparency for these big movers in our industry. What does accountability look like to you? How do we hold these companies accountable and responsible, and what should they be doing when they do things like this that interfere with or disrupt our industry as a whole? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call if you have any personal experiences with Launchpad or in general. So give us a call and or text.
Yes. Thank you guys to everybody for listening in on this, our second podcast so far in a long series of podcasts that we're hoping to create for you. And I also wanted to just give a good shout out to NoCloud, who was the creator of our intro and outro music. And also to Jared Olkane for being our editor, who makes it make sense. Thank you so much, Jared. And as Gia said, don't forget to call in and or text. The number for that is +1-804-404-5509. We are extremely excited to hear from you all. And if you just have a funny story, that is also acceptable, because we really, really enjoy those as well. Thanks, guys, so, so much. And we'll see you next week.
As a podcast about the tattooing industry, you'll often hear us offering our opinions on various business models, services, brands, and products. Sometimes we are of the opinion that something is of low quality, unethical, or even scammy.
However, please note, these are just our professional opinions, and you should conduct your own research and reach your own conclusions to be best informed.